Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
On The Advertising Show, which is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine, you can visit Ad Age online at adage.com. That's easy to remember. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production on the SSI Radio Network. That's how we get it out to so many radio stations around the country, and we're pleased to have you listening today. Special guest is Chris Roars, president of the Television Bureau of Advertising. If you want to get a sneak peek of what they do, you can go to tvb.org.
Org or com?
It says org.
Oh, it does?
But we'll let Chris straighten us out.
Yeah.
Well, if it doesn't work with org, type in
com. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Anyway, we're back. Ray Schillens, Brad Forsythe. It's going to be a great time to spend with you today talking about television advertising. Of course, this is The Advertising Show, so this is very logical at this point, isn't it?
Certainly, it makes sense to me. And we will be having the garden segment next hour, right?
No. If you'd like, I can talk about something. I bought cypress mulch, and I'll never buy it again.
Okay? Diazinon. Diazinon is a good thing to always do a little mouthwash rinse with before you go out to garden. It helps clear things up, doesn't
it? Now we're going to get in trouble with the FDA.
Well, you know, it could be worse. It could be
the FCC.
It could be the FBI, and that just is a great segue into this little news item I found, Ray, on MediaPost.com. The FBI has scheduled the New York Times and selected them to run their advertising campaign to accelerate recruitment of job applicants in the Arab, Hispanic, African-American, and Asian communities. Now, I'm going to comment on this after I read this. Four insertions are planned. The first insertion appeared just this past April in the Times and under the banner of Great Places to Work, a dedicated advertising environment created by the New York Times to showcase challenging and rewarding job opportunities. The last insertion is scheduled to run in September. And I don't know about you, Ray, but, you know, I question the media selection for Arab, Hispanic, African-American, and Asians reading the New York Times for recruiting into the FBI. I'm questioning, and of course we've had plenty of what they call multicultural topics that we've covered with people much smarter than you and I about this.
Sure.
They would argue that you need to do it within the media selection or media outlet that caters to those particular ethnic groups, and I don't know. Even though I'm sure the FBI is going after a more qualified and maybe higher educated individual there, in my opinion, you know, I'm not sure about the efficiencies of reaching again Arabs, Hispanics, African Americans, and Asians in the New York Times.
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see the demographics of the reach of that newspaper. But the other thing is, don't they normally get those folks out of the military? I mean, that seems like a kind of an odd thing to do.
It's interesting because they are recruiting both public and private work, as you know. So, you know, in many cases, those government agencies have both the private sector working, and then you have actual government officials, I suppose. Nowadays, and it's been this way for a while, I believe, to get in the FBI, you either have to have a law degree or an accounting degree.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And it's been that way.
An accounting degree?
Mm-hmm. You're basically looking at, you know, Enron-type problems. Or with regard to law, it's not enough just to be a shoot 'em up, bang bang kind of guy. You got to really understand the law, and they require law degrees.
No longer Elliot Ness type is what you're saying, right?
Correct. They have newer cars now. I loved that show, The Untouchables. Didn't you?
Yeah, Elliot Ness was from Cleveland, by the way.
Was he?
That was what that show was all about. Matter of fact, my wife went to school with his niece.
Who was the star of The Untouchables?
Isn't it Robert Stack?
That's right. And if you have ever seen, and which I have, maybe you have on the History Channel, Elliot Ness, Robert Stack looked a lot better than Elliot did. I mean, Elliot was a good guy, and he did a hell of a job with that.
Right.
But Robert Stack played a much, I don't know, just cooler version of Elliot.
There's a Great Lakes Brewing Company that has a beer named Elliot Ness Brew.
Seriously?
By the way. Seriously, yeah.
And when you pop it? It makes a funny sound? I don't know.
It's got a silencer on the cap.
If you drink too much, you want to go out and arrest someone. I don't know.
I don't know about that. That's real interesting, though. Real, real interesting about the avenue for marketing.
It could have been that they got sold a special for-insertion package that made it attractive to them because that's what their offer was.
So. And therefore, when the FBI comes calling, you'll let them do anything they want. Is that what you're saying?
If an Arabic guy from the FBI comes to your door in the next few years, ask him if he responded to this. That would be one way of checking, don't you think?
Yeah. That's the real news. Here's Andy Borowitz on the Advertising Show.
Hi, this is Andy Borowitz for the Advertising Show. And now, here's this week's feature from the Borowitz Report.
Just hours after the U.S. forces in Iraq nabbed Dr. Germ, the evil genius behind Saddam Hussein's bioweapons program, a team of U.S. commandos in northern Iraq captured Dr. Octopus, the Riddler, and the Penguin, three of the most wanted supervillains in the world. The evil trio, all sworn nemesis of President Bush, were captured in what military officials called a top-secret hideout outside Saddam's home of Tikrit. U.S. Special Operations Forces, who had been seeking the evildoers for months, said that the sinister threesome were found in an abandoned warehouse marked only by a sign reading, "Abandoned Warehouse. Keep Out." The three supervillains were quickly subdued despite their efforts to escape on what the officials called a jet-powered umbrella. In Washington, White House spokesman Ari Fleischer praised the military for capturing the elusive evildoers, but cautioned, "Even though it's great to have a villain like Dr. Octopus in our clutches, my spidey sense tells me there's more danger ahead." Mr. Fleischer's words soon turned prophetic as U.S. forces in southern Iraq later discovered what they called a mobile kryptonite reprocessing facility. The van-like vehicle could be used for turning spent kryptonite fuel rods into red, green, and even gold kryptonite chunks, officials said. In late February, Secretary of State Colin Powell had played for the UN Security Council tapes purporting to be of two Iraqi soldiers discussing such a kryptonite reprocessing facility. On the tape, one of the Iraqi soldiers could be heard saying, "Green kryptonite, making me weak."
This is Andy Borowitz, and this has been a special edition of the Borowitz Report from the Advertising Show. To read more reports or to receive daily email alerts, log on to borowitzreport.com. This is Andy Borowitz saying, keep it fake, baby.
That's Andy Borowitz on the Advertising Show, always a fun feature to share with you guys. Listening out there, Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth. You can also catch Andy Friday mornings on CNN, American Morning. No longer Paula Zahn's American Morning. It's just American Morning.
Paula's now in the evening, if you're looking for.
Yes, she is. Yeah. And how's she doing, I wonder?
I don't know. It's still probably a little early, although I'm sure they have current ratings. She's only been there a few weeks, so still finding her way, I suppose.
Sure. Yeah. I still question that. I don't know that that's a logical move for her.
Did you catch earlier in the week, I made a point last Monday to watch the exchange of Katie Couric and Jay Leno. They switched places. Did you hear about this?
No, I didn't. Yep. Well, yeah, I heard about it. I didn't catch it, though.
Yeah, they've been doing that all week this past week. Anyway, I made a point to catch Leno on the Today Show, and then, of course, Katie that evening. And I must tell you, I thought Katie did an okay job. Leno did a much better job of replacing her than she did.
Oh, yeah?
I think so.
So Katie was good on the late,
She was okay.
On the Tonight Show, I should say.
Again, I think a comedian does a better job of transitioning to the morning show than a stiff journalist does going the other way.
Okay. Yeah. Very interesting.
But it was good.
What do you think?
It's a great idea.
Stick around. The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
It's The Muppet Show!
Well, if this were the Muppet Show, you would be Kermit.
No.
Who would you be?
I would want to be the other guy, the less weighty frog. Kermit's a little heavy.
Okay.
Plus, he's green.
And we don't have a Miss Piggy, so we're out there as far as that goes. We're talking about television today. Chris Rohr is our special guest, president of the Television Bureau of Advertising. And, yes, we were correct. It is TVB.org. Chris joined the TVB as president in January of 2000. He came to the association from his post as vice president of sales and marketing for Post Newsweek stations, a position he held since April of 1998. Previously, he was VP and GM of WFSB-TV in Hartford. What a great market that is. From 1980 to 1989, he had held various positions at WDIV-TV in Detroit, The Look of Detroit, including vice president of marketing and station manager, and it goes on and on and on. He actually began in 1972. Which is a year after I started, before moving to TV rep business with Telerep. So we welcome Chris Rohrs to the advertising show. Chris, it's great to have you on the show today.
Thank you very much. I was afraid you were going to bill me as Miss Piggy there for a minute.
Would you like to be?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
That's fine.
But
yep.
I'm delighted to be on, and I guess it was about a year and a half ago that I was first on the program when you were starting up.
Yes, that's correct. It was October or November. I can't remember, Ray. October, November of 2001.
Yeah, it was, right.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations to you guys because you were just getting going then, and obviously you're doing really well now.
Well, you're kind to say that. It's having guests like you, Chris, and others that help our show along and, you know, frankly, give us access and our listeners, more importantly, access to people like yourself that are great representatives of your industry. By the way, when Ray was mentioning in your reading your bio there, he failed to mention, and I always like to capitalize on these important points.
Page two.
Chris is a alumnus of Notre Dame, so it's the Fighting Irish.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
So, that plays well with some of your listeners and not so well with some others.
Well, he did plug Detroit, so Michigan or Michigan State or any of those other,
Detroit's a great
just
media
being
market.
From Detroit, it's one of the best media markets in the country.
And you ad-libbed that little line about the TV station, Ray.
Because I have a TV mug that says that I was given by a gentleman by the name of Don Hamlin, who was an account executive in that market. And
sure.
I'm sure you might know of him.
I do know that name.
There you go.
Yeah.
And, of course, being he was a 71 graduate, Chris was, of Notre Dame.
That's
so
correct.
So I guess he used to hang around with Regis Philbin.
Well, Regis was a little bit ahead of that, but Regis is obviously a proud and active grad of Notre Dame. I was in the class with Joe Theismann. That's how we date ourselves, different years as to who your quarterback was.
So when he had that career-ending injury, did you feel a little bit of his pain?
Well, in a way, except I happened to be there that day. That was at Giants Stadium, and I'm a lifelong Giants fan. So while I hated to see Joe get injured, you know, it enabled the Giants to win the game when Joe
right.
had to leave the field.
Yeah, so if you ever run into Joe Theismann, you always say, "Let me see your scar."
Yeah, don't bring that up. That was painful.
Yeah, it really was. I can visually still see the replay on that. It was quite a drama there. You know, speaking of things of change in this world, the electronic media publication produced by Crane changed their publication recently to Television Week a few months ago. What do you think of the new format and content?
Well, first of all, I think the title's great.
Yeah, I figured you would.
That was a good move. The updated, more visual, I guess, high-energy look I like. It's interesting with a publication like that. It's not unlike a television station when you change your graphics and your set. And it creates a lot of energy internally, and I think people feel that it's a lot more impactful with their viewers or listeners than it really is. Because pretty quickly it comes back to, you know, what's the content and what's the substance. But I thought it was a nice cosmetic change, and I like the title.
Like anything, it's you get used to one format, and it takes a little getting used to the new. And like you, I like the new format. I picked up a copy, Ray, a few weeks, or maybe it was last week. And darn if Chris Rohrs in the little, you know, most of these trade publications will have a page or two dedicated to pictures that people send in.
Sure.
Chris Rohr is all over the pictorial
really?
There. Apparently, as an outgrowth of the Television Bureau of Advertising's marketing conference they held in New York April 15th, there's old Chris with his arm around Tim Russert. who was the keynote speaker at the event. And I want to talk a little bit about the highlights of your conference. And I can't remember, there was somebody else that you had that was of note there. That
Deborah
was,
Norville.
Yeah, that's right. Deborah Norville.
Which, if you stand next to the right people, you get your picture in publication.
Boy, isn't that
that's true. In fact, you know, what they did is they just had Chris, they had a cutout of Chris. They kept moving around the room. No, nobody really knew.
They had a cutout of Deborah, and he took it with him.
Deborah's a tall lady, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
She did a great job for us. She hosted our lunch at that conference, moderated a satellite interview with David Martin, the Pentagon correspondent for CBS, and sort of officiated over the lunch, and she was just tremendous, as she is on air with her program.
Well, what is she doing now? What is Deborah doing?
She's the moderator or host of Inside Edition, a syndicated show that's on 6 days a week. I'm sure it's on in most of the markets that your show is in.
So she's probably no longer on network, but probably making more dough, I would imagine.
Yeah, and it fits her. The schedule suits her life circumstances. She's got a young family with kids, and it's a more predictable schedule than working for a network. So it works out great for her, and she does a very good job with the show.
She was also written up in Guidepost magazine a long time ago too, as being a real quality person. Nice.
I got to know her when we had the station or the show on my station in Hartford. And from time to time, as with all advertising communities, you try to get some of the visible on-air people to come in and talk to your advertisers or community people. And she was always exceptionally willing to do that and was just great and very effective with any group that you would put her with.
And isn't it funny how you recall those good people, too, because the ones that don't do that make just as lasting an impression, but it's a negative impression.
Well, you recall them. You just can't talk about them on the radio.
There you go.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned your marketing conference, or I guess I mentioned it, and we all talk about it. How many days was the event held, and where was it held in New York?
We moved it last year. We changed our whole plan with our marketing conference, and we moved it to New York from Las Vegas. We were having trouble getting our customers, the advertisers and the agency people, to come to Las Vegas for our conference, and we wanted very much to have strong presence and participation by our customers. And Vegas, you know, it's especially in a choppy economy, it's harder to get a lot of people to justify that trip. It feels too much like a boondoggle, I guess. So we thought New York being an important media center made more sense, and we also decided to partner up with the automobile industry.
I read that.
And that was a key decision for us. It really clicked. So we do our conference at the Javits Center, the big convention arena in New York, and we do it while the New York International Automobile Show is going on.
I think that was a brilliant idea, Chris, and we're going to talk about what the highlights of your marketing conference right after the break here.
On the Advertising Show, it's Ray Shillins along with Brad Forsyth, and the Advertising Show, our special guest today is Chris Roars. Chris is president of the Television Bureau of Advertising. If you've got some time to spend today, it's worthwhile to stick around. We'll talk about television, about advertising, and we'll do that in just a minute. The Advertising Show, The Wacky World of Marketing, coming up next. Stay around.
For the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to New York, where AP reports a mermaid who was captured after parading topless through Coney Island will get a $10,000 check from New York City. Amy Gunderson sued the city, claiming her First Amendment rights were violated when she was arrested for wearing only a thong and body paint at the 2001 Mermaid Parade, a fixture for two decades, traditionally featuring floats with topless women dressed as surf-tossed sea creatures. She said her rights were violated when she was arrested for exposing her chest, and the charges were eventually dismissed. The city, though, admits no wrongdoing in reaching the settlement. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
See, we could all sing along with that if you want to.
Sure.
What a great song. This week it's not Silly Spots, it's Silly TV Songs, but these aren't silly. That's a great show.
Yeah.
We're taking you through the years, too, with Chris Roris, president of the Television Bureau of Advertising, and Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth here on The Advertising Show.
You know, before the break, we were talking about your marketing conference, Chris, in New York, April 15th. Hit with us, if you would, the highlights for the conference. And then a little bit later, I want to talk about the Tim Russert keynote speaker and,
sure,
and what his content was.
Yeah. When we moved the conference to New York last year, and really the focal point was to connect and partner with the automobile industry, we very quickly realized we had a good formula. We had a big success last year with year one of it, and this was year two. And it grew from about 750 registrants to 1,100 this year. And I think it'll grow again because the momentum is building. The partnership with the automobile industry is crucial. The opportunity to have a lot of customer presence at the conference, not just automotive, but all different categories of advertiser, that's very important because it gives interaction opportunity for our member stations. The New York location is crucial because you have a lot of advertising people here already, but also it's a destination that almost anybody can justify legitimately a business trip to go to.
Sure.
And the last part of our, I guess you'd say, our design formula was to make it a one-day conference. We really think that's crucial because of all the other factors, the New York and the car business. It gives you time, if you come to our conference, to do a lot of other business while you're in New York. So we're going to stick with that formula of one-day New York, focused on the automobile industry and held at the Javits Center during the auto show.
Seems to me with the auto industry, it ought to be Detroit or something like that. That's a great,
you know, when the automobile show is held in Detroit?
No one shows up.
When? First week in January.
Well, that's the dumbest thing in the world.
So, yeah. We actually talked about that, and we're interested in the Detroit show because, you know, it is a great media town. Yeah. But New York's just, all in all, a bit of a better choice.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're right.
You know, a lot of people, when they do hold that in New York, they come down from Alaska to warm up. big thrill.
No, not Alaska, Brad. Albany.
You know, the other thing that's important for us, of course, and it's obvious to most of your listeners probably, the automobile category represents 25-30% of a typical TV station's revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So that partnership is crucial. And then the other thing that really works great is the visual energy and just the general energy you get by having your conference at the location of an ongoing live automobile show is tremendous.
Well, I don't know whose idea it was, Chris, but whoever's it was to tie your marketing conference into the auto show, it was a brilliant idea and brilliant move, and you've done well with it. What did Tim Russert have to say about the television industry?
Well, what we asked Tim to do is to set sort of the big picture stage that our businesses fit into, the world, the nation, the economy, terrorism, the war, all of those things. So we had him start the day and set the stage in that way and just lightly touch on some of his thoughts about where media businesses are going. But he spent most of his time setting up, what was happening in Iraq and with politics and... And it was a perfect timing, of course, because really the war was just basically ending at that point. And he did a great job. And, and talked a little bit about, you know, his experiences with the Meet the Press program. But he just brings, first of all, he's a great authority on all of those issues, but he brings a warmth and a genuineness that just made the whole thing, it started the day on a great, strong note.
You know, Tim Russert, in my opinion, does just the best job of those Sunday morning public affairs programs, hands down, I think, better.
Very good at what he does.
Yeah, wasn't he a former speechwriter for a politician, Chris, or do you recall?
Yeah, his background is in politics, and he produced the program. I can remember, and I think it's 10 years, or is it 15 years? Time moves along. But when he became the host, before that, he was producing it. And it was a bit of an unusual move to take a behind-the-camera person and put him on camera, but it sure turned out great.
Yeah, well, talk about someone that can move in front of the camera and know all the ropes. It's a great story. Let me ask you, in the short time we have to finish up this segment, a bit of a loaded question. And, of course, on Saturday afternoon, Ray usually is loaded, so it kind of ties in well what we're doing.
Stop that.
We had a representative from the Cable Television Advertising Bureau, Kevin Berry. You may know him.
I do know Kevin.
We had him on several weeks ago, and we talked a bit about their industry. And I wanted to ask you what you think about Cable Television Advertising Bureau's new ad campaign, Cable First.
In 30 seconds or less, please, if you would, please. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they're a different organization than us. They represent both the cable networks and the MSOs, the cable operators in the local markets. And that gives them a different mission than we have. We just represent the television stations, not the broadcast networks. So our mission is very different. They have to be advocates for cable, both network and locally.
Hold on to that thought for just a minute, okay, Chris?
Sure.
Chris Rohr is our special guest, president of the Television Bureau of Advertising. TVB.org is their website. Ray Shillins, Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. We'll be right back.
Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth are taking your questions at theadvertisingshow.com. You're listening to The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network.
Baby, if you've ever wondered whatever became of me, I'm living on the air in Cincinnati, Cincinnati WKRP. Got kind of tired of packing and unpacking.
Back on The Advertising Show, as we look at television, and our special guest today, Chris Rohr, is president of the Television Bureau of Advertising, with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. And boy, that certainly does ring true. That's a great, great TV show.
You know, it's funny, Ray, before we get back to the interview with Chris, I used to tell people that back in the mid-70s, when I first got out of college, I worked for the original WKRP. It just was in Kansas City, not Cincinnati.
No. We all worked for the original WKRP, alive and well. There's Herb's and Andy's and all those kinds. Jennifer's, more importantly.
And the Venus flytrap.
Had one of those, too. Yeah, absolutely.
That was a fun time.
It was a great show.
Before the break, we were talking, Chris, about differentiating the TVB from the Cable Advertising Bureau, and you were mentioning how CAB has a bit of a different focus than the TVB. Continue with your thought there,
sure.
If you would, please.
We make a distinction when we do our work positioning local broadcast versus local cable, and the distinction really is on the cable side. When cable networks like CNN or ESPN are out there in the marketplace selling themselves, really their value equation or their pitch comes down to two things. First of all, they sell targeting, that the cable network has a very precisely targeted audience, and it's a very efficient way to get at that audience. The second thing they sell is CPM, that it's cheaper than the broadcast networks. And that's really the pitch for cable, targeted and cheaper. But that's network television. And we make the distinction in our work that neither one of those premises or value propositions holds up in the local marketplace because, first of all, cable is sold differently locally. Groups of networks are bundled or packaged together in order to aggregate audience to make it more competitive with broadcast. And when you group networks together, that precise targeting premise starts to weaken and go out the window. But far more important than that is the CPM issue, or who's cheaper. While it is absolutely accurate to say that the CPMs for network cable are much lower than broadcast network, about half as low, in fact, the exact opposite is true in local television, where the cost per thousand, the CPMs, the cost per points, are much higher for cable than for broadcast. It's the mirror image of the network business. So that's a key part of the distinction we make and that we talk to advertisers about, that it is much more cost-efficient to buy broadcast in the local marketplace, even though on the network side of things, cable is cheaper.
Well, that's interesting. We have an email question that was sent up just a few minutes ago that was along the lines of what you're talking about here. It's a listener out of Florida who writes, Stephanie writes, if you're a first-time local broadcast TV advertiser, is your first point of entry typically an independent TV station, an emerging network affiliate such as a WB or UPN, or is it more often cable?
Well, of course, we advocate that it should be the broadcast side because, again, it's more cost efficient and because you deliver stronger ratings, greater reach, and ability to talk to the audience. And the way we advocate using broadcast is multiple stations, multiple day parts. That way you get you build your reach efficiently, and you get to take advantage of some cost-effective areas, not just prime time and not just newscasts, but all day parts.
And I would also encourage the listeners, if you do advertise on television, in particular cable, and you make that transition over to broadcast, you may want to invest in your production, because in a lot of cases the cable production execution is...
it's going to stick out like a sore thumb in a
big,
bad way.
Yeah, it's inferior to what you see.
Plus, we'll feature you on bad advertising.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, it's been an interesting conversation about advertising on television. And any final thoughts before we wrap it up this segment?
The one thing I always like to do, and you have a lot of advertisers in your audience, is we have a great section of our website that's designed just for advertisers and agency people. It's called the Advertiser and Agency Resource Channel. So if your listeners want to go to www.tbb.org and then go to the Advertiser and Agency Resource Channel, there's a very visible section you can click on. And it's self-registered, and it's all free, but there's a great amount of information there.
Free is good. Chris Rohr is the president of the Television Bureau of Advertising with Ray Shillins on The Advertising Show and Brad Forsyth. We'll be back in just a minute. Stick around.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Oh, we'd let that play for just a little while in honor of our special guest today on The Advertising Show, which was Chris Rohr, president of the Television Advertising Bureau, TVB.org. He's got free information up there, too, so it might behoove you to go up and take a look at it. As you're listening on the radio, you also need to know that you can listen on the web at theadvertisingshow.com. We stream our audio live each and every week at theadvertisingshow.com. You can tell when we're on the air because Mr. Microphone is lit up. Okay.
You know, when you hear that music, it makes me want to, you know, I used to years ago when I would be signing documents.
Yeah.
They used to say, Radar, what am I signing? Remember that? That was a great, great series,
man,
wasn't it?
It was a great show.
And, you know,
great
the show. Records that they had on that last episode.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. Well, I remember all the parties that the people had. The media, various television stations and radio stations had a farewell party. Not too many shows get a send-off like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up in the in the very prominent position, too. They were still high in the ratings, as I recall, when they left that show.
Unlike Kissed by an Angel that we reported on a few weeks ago that did a less than ideal
Well, exit. There was an HGTV special on about carpentry or something.
And spinning plates was on the History Channel.
Spinning plates.
You know, your favorite subject, Ray, Tanqueray. I don't know if you're familiar with what they're going to be doing here, but very interesting concept, I think. They'll be smack dab in the middle of a movie poster for Down with Love, a film starring Renee Zellweger, in a unique creative combining advertising and product placement. The ad will not appear in movie theaters, but it's actually on a poster that gives the appearance of being a poster, but it'll be running in magazines such as Vanity Fair and W Magazine's 20th Century Fox is doing a sweepstakes in the New York Times. The movie opens May 16th, and J. Walter Thompson created the ad. But if you get a chance and you see it, it'll be a nice pink design with some cutouts of visuals that take you right back to the 50s. And then that nice green bottle.
Little Tanqueray.
Yeah. Yeah. Which looks a lot like the one you have right there on your desk.
Would you like more? So you're not having an olive in yours today, right?
Why, I've had my salad already.
I feel like this is a cigar show or something.
Yeah. Long ashes to you.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Every week we take a look at the good and the bad of advertising to help you get a little bit better about what you do. And this week, it's not so bad. As a matter of fact, it's pretty good.
And now it's time for the Advertising Show's Advertising Showcase, an outstanding example of on-target advertising for the good stuff. Here's Ray and Brad.
Okay, there's always good out there. It's just sometimes you have to look a little bit harder to find it. Well, what do we got?
Yeah, we have a spot by Bank One, the Disney Visa card. I don't know if you've seen it. It's entitled Little Reminders. It was put out by Garner Nelson Project New York. Rather than Little Reminders, and you know, maybe the title should be called Bugging You. But it's a very interesting concept, and for those that maybe have not seen it, I'll describe it for you. The spot opens with a child in a grocery aisle asking her mother, "Don't we need more broccoli?" And then the next kid is with his father asking him, "Hey, I think I need a haircut." And you're thinking, what's this all about?
What's going on?
Third shot is of a child in the back seat of the family car asking his mother, "Hey, how are we doing on gas?" And so you're saying, where are we going with this?
Right.
Well, then they show the visual of the Visa card full screen while the announcer says, here's why. Bank One introduces Disney's Visa credit card, the new way to turn your everyday spending into magical Disney rewards. Disney's new Visa card Disney's new Visa card only from Bank One. Now, we're ending the spot, and we're in Disney. Actually, Disney World, and a young kid is saying to another kid, you wouldn't believe what I had to do to get here. Now, what I thought was great about the spot, Ray, is that throughout the spot, there's a nice little music track that carries the entire vignette there of the three little scenarios, and it's very well executed. And what I really like most about the spot is that it sets up the value proposition for the product in a very humorous way to get the viewers' buy-in, obviously targeting parents of young children to connect up with the message. And in this particular case, Bank One is targeting parents through child-related scenarios, as I described, that are intended to, I think, make parents feel their children deserves a trip to Disney World. And, you know, after all, if it's a matter of applying for a credit card and you can reduce your potential cost of a trip to Disney, why not? It's an interesting strategy.
Sure.
I especially like the premise, which essentially, you know, tells the parent that children's willingness to do just about anything to get to go to Disney, eat broccoli, get a haircut, et cetera. It's a great example.
Get gas.
Yes, it's a great example.
Which is what happens when you eat broccoli.
That's true. Now we're talking Beano. Another example, I think, Ray, of a great marketing campaign that's targeting parents through the hearts of their children.
So. You know, and it's really important, too, to note that just because this is a national campaign, it doesn't mean that your local campaign can't have the same flavor. All you have to do is open your eyes a little bit, open your ears, and ask some good questions about what you're doing.
And invest.
And invest. And you know, you really, if you invest in logic, you really don't have to have a lot of cash out of pocket to make something really, really good and distinctly different from your competition.
True.
And if you copy your competition, shame on you.
Well, it reminds everybody about your competitor's spot, right?
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit Advertising Age Magazine online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. And it's a big cast here, too, as a matter of fact. There are so many big radio midgets running around. It's amazing. On the SSI Radio Network.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
This indeed on The Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit Advertising Age Magazine online at adage.com. When you don't want to actually pick up the paper, you go right there and you get it, huh?
Pick up your computer.
Yeah, pick a little bit tough. This is a Big Radio Midgets production here on the SSI Radio Network with our special guest today, Chris Rohr, is president of the Television Bureau of Advertising. Listening online, you can do that too at theadvertisingshow.com. If you want to find out more about the Television Bureau of Advertising, go to tvb.org. And we'll be talking with Chris here in just a few moments. On the way this segment, we've got Jeffrey Gittimer, the sales savvy and advice of that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also kind of funny, too. Almost as funny as Andy Borowitz, actually.
Can you tell when you listen to Gittimer that he's losing his hair? Can you tell that on the radio?
He's not listening. It's just sliding off the back, that's all.
He would be a great endorser for Propecia.
What is Propecia?
It's some pill you take to grow hair.
Oh, that's for hair? Okay.
I think.
Okay.
You and I don't have that problem, fortunately.
Yeah.
Do you watch 60 Minutes, Ray?
From time to time I do, yeah.
Yeah. I saw it last Sunday, and I thought it was interesting because this comes from what I consider the strange press release of the week. CBS News spokesman last week said that 60 Minutes correspondent Ed Bradley underwent successful coronary bypass surgery in New York April 29th, but the medical procedure was not disclosed to the media because Ed's a very private guy.
Really?
Now, that's what it says. But interestingly, now, here's how it came about.
Well, that's kind of like Letterman.
Well, yeah, but he can be a private guy.
People found out, though.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, here's the interesting part about this, Ray. CBS finally announced last Friday that because a Bradley piece on 60 Minutes was going to be showing Bradley interviewing a gun lobbyist, and but yet the spoken part was going to be a stand-up segment that the associate CBS Bob Simon was going to be doing, put the entire situation in kind of a strange perspective in terms of having to disclose the fact that Ed Bradley had undergone coronary bypass surgery.
Why would you want to keep that a secret? That is not a big deal.
Well, he's
anymore.
A private guy.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. I did see that particular piece last week.
Right.
I thought Ed looked a little drowsy.
Well, he probably
so does. Maybe it was right before he needed that.
You know who else looked a lot drowsy? Farrah Fawcett. Did you see some stuff on her about MTV?
You're saying drowsy or droopy?
Drowsy. No,
okay.
She wasn't droopy. She was drowsy. This is something Viacom's MTV networks went all out last week to create regime change on TV, launching its preemptive strike at broadcast networks. Ooh. The cabler threw the mother of all upfront sales presentations with a star-studded cast that made the annual NBC pitch typically the most glamorous and expensive upfront look-alike of Amateur Hour. Okay? The highlights from this thing. This, by the way, is from Ad Age. This is Richard Linnett. It's called Ad Ages. Okay?
Hmm.
Kid Rock performed a mini-concert amidst a blaze of booming pyrotechnics and profanities, with Viacom chief Mel Karmazin in the audience applauding wildly. He's having a good time. Uh-huh. Let's see. Kids girl Pam Anderson made her entrance dragging a compliant Joe Uva, CEO of Omnicom's OMD, in handcuffs. Jerry Mathers, the Beaver, and Barbara Felden, Agent 99, were channeled back from cable prehistory. Cable prehistory. I like the way they put that. And they were on the stage. Ozzy Osbourne, his daughter. Ozzy shuffling, his daughter walking. Farrah Fawcett, who was dazed and confused, misreading the teleprompters. The word embodies became nobodies, describing a top MTV executive. And traipsed absentmindedly off the stage instead of lining up with the others to take a bow afterward.
That's funny.
In bad shape. What's going on there?
That's interesting because as you were describing that, it reminded me, there's a word in the English language that depending on who you use to align this word with,
right,
it takes on a totally different meaning. And I want to share this with you.
Which one?
Well, you mentioned Pam Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
If they were to say the perky Pam Anderson versus saying, for example, the perky Katie Couric,
yeah,
you're getting two totally different visuals there, aren't you, in your mind?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I just want to make that point because when you said Pam Anderson, I was getting a perky visual there.
Were you really?
And she wasn't pixie, but she was perky.
I wonder if we could describe Jeffrey Gittimer as perky. Yeah, what the heck. Let's go ahead and do it. That'd be great.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations with Jeffrey Gittimer, nationally syndicated columnist in the network of City Business Journals and other great publications worldwide. If you're offended by common sense commentary, don't you dare listen. Now, here's Jeffrey.
Having moved from the north, Cherry Hill, New Jersey, to the south, Charlotte, North Carolina, has helped me understand the value of business friends. They're much easier to establish in the south, and they're much more loyal. If you're friends with your best customer, it will often eliminate the need for price checking, price negotiating, and delivery time demands. And there's another huge bonus to being friends. Competition is eliminated, Billy Bob. Your best competition couldn't blast you away from a customer who's also a friend, Bubba. I'm often in conventions where someone is lamenting the fact that they can't get into around the so-called good old boy network. That's the biggest bunch of baloney and the lamest sales excuse I've ever heard. All the salesperson is saying is he has failed to bring anything of value to the table, and he's failed to establish a relationship or make a friend, and someone else has. You can only earn a commission using a sales technique, but you can earn a fortune building friendships and relationships.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations from The Advertising Show, the only radio show in America featuring Jeffrey Gittimer as a regular weekly guest. To learn more about his books, tapes, CDs, and speaking engagements, log on to Gittimer.com, Gittomer.com. And tune in next week when we'll hear Jeffrey say,
"This is Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you that if no one responds to your ad, it may be because your ad sucks."
And it is so true, too. It's all about the relationship thing, not about your sales tactics or something like that.
You know, I didn't know Jeffrey was from southern New York.
Yeah.
Well, he's taken on that persona, that southern.
To me, he still is very much a New York kind of a guy.
You know, you take the distance between New York and Charlotte,
yeah,
and you're between Abilene and Houston, I imagine.
Yeah.
You know, just
no,
as
it's not that far.
It really isn't
that far.
You know, I don't know about you, but I don't consider, well, Charlotte is the South. And of course,
Charlotte is very much the South. Yeah.
But yet, if you look at it on the map, it surely does not that go that far to get you to the North.
No. Hey, here's something here from McDonald's. The world's largest fast feeder is under fire for making people fat. We knew that. It's also fending off a job discrimination lawsuit by a 420-pound man. He happens to work for McDonald's.
Free food?
No. Allegations described in this lawsuit are completely false and without merit, says McDonald's in a statement. A U.S. District Court dismissed the change motion to drop a case brought by Joseph Connor, who alleged a local Mickey D's reneged on a job offer as a burger slinger because of his size 54 pants.
Oh, I see. They wouldn't even let him work there.
No.
Because he was like a reminder of what's going to happen to you if you eat too much of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
That
so
he could go as a billboard for McDonald's.
No, stop that. Chris Rohr is our special guest, president of the Television Bureau of Advertising, is coming up next on The Advertising Show. Stick around.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillen and Brad Forsyth.
Well, that was pre-Everybody Loves Raymond, right? Or maybe, no, Raymond was around quite a long time, about the same time, wasn't it, as Seinfeld?
No, Raymond's more recent than Seinfeld.
Raymond just got signed on for like 50 mil or something like
that. I read that, and he's now the higher paid than both Kelsey Grammer and the folks over at Friends. I think it's somewhere between $1.7 and $1.8 million per episode.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a great show.
I'd like to just have the taxes they take out of that, wouldn't you?
Right.
The daily interest accrued.
Do you think you get free checking with that? Sure, you probably would.
You know, I forgot, and maybe you know, Ray, the artist that, the musician that used to play the theme for Seinfeld.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking it sounds like Herbie Hancock. That kind of a thing.
It does sound like him, and it's not him as I recall, but it's someone that also would sit in the background and do a little of those quick riffs, as you may recall, in between scenes and so forth.
Yeah.
A name you would know if I only knew it. Well, I'll take music for 50, Alex.
And if you know it, please let us know at theadvertisingshow.com.
Yeah.
You won't win anything.
Sure you will.
Certainly, what are you going to want?
Weekend with Ray.
Where?
First you win, then we tell you where.
At a Mexican restaurant, hopefully.
Yeah.
Chris Rohr is our special guest today on the advertising show. Chris is president of the Television Bureau of Advertising. It's a trade organization and a trade association, not-for-profit, of local television broadcasters. Its members include television broadcast groups, advertising sales reps, and more than 500 individual television stations. Chris joined TVB as president in 2000. He came to the association from his post as vice president of sales and marketing for the Post Newsweek stations, a position he held since April of 98. Got into the biz right out of Notre Dame in 1972. So we welcome Chris to the show. Thanks for being a part of the show today, Chris.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Just to clarify, Ray, are we a not-for-profit organization, too?
At this particular point, yes.
Oh, yes.
Not by design.
Yeah, right.
By design.
You know, I want to jump into something that I think a lot of people...
It's called a design flaw.
A lot of people can relate to is viewing. Today's viewing is a little different than it was many years ago. Chris, I know that anyone over the age of 40 can recall that decades ago, family viewing was done in an unusual way. It was done with... The family.
Yeah. In the living room.
Yes. In fact, back in the 50s, multiple families viewed television because in many cases they were the only family on the block with a TV set. But today, Chris, viewership is not such a family-related event anymore. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
A couple of things changed. First of all, the nature of the programming obviously has changed. And, you know, the culture is different. What's acceptable and how far people push the envelope now in programming, whether it's television, radio, or movies, is radically different. So there isn't as much product that a family can comfortably sit and watch together. The second thing I think that's changed is that every home has multiple sets in it. You know, it's not at all uncommon to have a house have 6, 7, 8 television sets in it. And it's become much more of a personal viewing experience. And, you know, when you walk around the typical American home, if there's 4 or 5 people in it, there may well be 4 or 5 different programs being viewed. And so I think those are the two main things that changed the whole dynamic.
Well, which came first, Chris? Was it the product or the programming that changed as a result of maybe the cable television niche programming, or was the market or the viewership going in that direction and just reflected that from a product or programming standpoint?
Boy, that's a question we could probably go back and forth on all day long. Does the culture change people or do people change the culture? I guess they kind of happen in small steps together, one contributing to the other. But there's no question. I mean, it would be fascinating to sit down and go to the Museum of Television in New York and look at the top programs from 25 years ago today and then look at them today, and what an amazing difference in our culture would be reflected that way. Or to go to a movie theater and see the nature of the shows. So I don't, but, you know, to your question, which came first, did the media change the culture, or did people change and the media reflects it? Like I said, I think we could go back on that one all day long.
You know, Ray and I have talked about this over and over for the past many months, and I want to get your take on it. Recently, during some special television event programming that Hispanic advertisers advertised on English-speaking programming in Spanish. Procter & Gamble, for example, ran for the first time a commercial for Crest in Spanish during the regular Grammys this year. We're big believers in Hispanic marketing here in the Advertising Show, but does it make sense, Chris, for a marketer to create a Spanish-voiced commercial and air it on special TV event programming that are mostly appealing to English-speaking viewers?
I don't think it does as a general rule. Certainly that's not a trend that I would expect to see get much traction, but on an isolated case or a special purpose, it might be quite effective for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's certainly noteworthy and catches your attention. And secondly, I guess you have to recognize that an awfully large percentage of the American population either speaks Spanish or is conversant enough to understand it. When you go into our high schools now, all the kids take Spanish. Nobody takes French or German or Russian or Japanese to speak of. I would venture to guess that 80% of the kids in high schools are taking Spanish. So there are an awfully high percentage of American people, either Hispanic, who have Hispanic roots or who don't, who understand. So I think an isolated case, that made some sense.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if that's something we'll see more of in the future. What do you expect to see as a result of broadcast network shifting to a more aggressive 12-month programming schedule?
Well, that's probably a good thing in most ways. We've been, I think, we being broadcast, have been competitively disadvantaged against cable in the last two or three years because our schedule tends to be loaded into these sweep periods. The strength of broadcast programming has been very concentrated on the four different months of the year that are called the sweep months, and it creates an opportunity for cable to compete more effectively against us in months like the summer, where broadcasters tended to be more rerun. So I think as you move to year-round measurement, it'll spread the strength of the broadcast programming more evenly. And that'll be good, I think, for the broadcasters, but it'll also probably be a good thing for the viewers.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, who won't have right now, and we're in a sweep period in May now, and you have too many times where there are good broadcast programs up against each other too often.
Right.
You know, that's interesting, and yeah, I guess in this case you have cable impacting broadcast television in a positive way, and competition once again becomes a good thing for the end user, that being the viewer.
I'd like to see sweeps weeks go all year round, though.
Yeah, well, you know, nice. I've often wondered about that, Chris. It seems a little bogus to me, and I'm an agency guy. Why in the world media buyers would base an entire buy for a period of time
based on a small portion of a sweep week.
That is not only a small portion of a sweep week or weeks rather, but it's also hyped programming that you're not seeing the rest of the broadcast month or whatever. And we're going to talk about that after the break.
Our special guest is Chris Roars. Chris is president of the Television Bureau of Advertising. You can find out more about TVB at online at TVB.org. You can also find a lot of great information, too, as well. We'll continue our conversation with Chris here on The Advertising Show. It's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. And let's see, what do we have coming up next? I think it could be the wacky world of marketing. So stick around. We'll be back.
For the wacky world of marketing.
Wacky world of marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to New York, where AP reports a mermaid who was captured after parading topless through Coney Island will get a $10,000 check from New York City. Amy Gunderson sued the city, claiming her First Amendment rights were violated when she was arrested for wearing only a thong and body paint at the 2001 Mermaid Parade, a fixture for two decades, traditionally featuring floats with topless women dressed as surf-tossed sea creatures. She said her rights were violated when she was arrested for exposing her chest, and the charges were eventually dismissed. The city, though, admits no wrongdoing in reaching the settlement. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and, unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing.
To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. You're listening to The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network.
Okay, Brad, it's Guess That Song. You know what that is?
You know, it sounds familiar, but I don't know who it is.
It's 90210.
Ah, there you go.
Okay.
My wife used to watch that, and I used to read a lot while she was watching it.
I never watched that show.
You know, and then you had Melrose that was a spinoff.
Right.
Yeah.
A big show, though. The Advertising Show, also a big show here at theadvertisingshow.com as we stream live, and we have our special guest, Chris Warris, president of the Television Bureau of Advertising. Chris, were you going to say something about 90210?
No, I was just laughing at all of the theme music you played, and it's striking how many great TV shows ended up with such recognizable theme music,
mm-hmm.
Signature music. I don't know whether it's the popularity of the show or because the music contributed to its appeal.
Well, my guess is, what other music gets that kind of frequency of play throughout the half hour?
And it's mostly instrumental too. There used to be that shows had the singing jingles, but they don't have it anymore.
What was that? Carrie had a little.
Drew Carey had the rock and roll thing.
Yeah, yeah. With vocals.
With vocals.
Yeah.
But he's got something different now. He doesn't use that anymore.
Of course, there's Cleveland Rocks. That's
Cleveland Rocks, your old
hometown.
And it does.
Sure it does. Before the break, Chris, I was talking about sweeps weeks on a local level. And, for those that may just be joining us, sweeps weeks, for definition, is very simply, I'll give you the layperson's definition, some hyped programming during a period of time in which they know ratings are taking place so that when advertisers and media people, media buyers, decide to purchase media for other times within that follow that time period, they use those ratings that were generated during the sweeps weeks, and that is in what they in turn use as a yardstick to suggest who is viewing on down the road. Is that really a fair way of doing it?
No, we're all kind of trapped in some systems that grew up 40 years ago and have been unable to figure a way to get away from it. Nielsen collects demographic information via diaries that viewers and listeners keep. And on the television side of the business, they do that in four different months during the year. So 16 weeks out of the year in total, they're collecting viewer demographic information via diaries. And the networks load up with their programming during those weeks to put their best foot forward and to get the best possible ratings. And the local stations do that with newscast content and things like that. And it's really not in anybody's interest anymore, but nobody's yet figured out how to break away from that and get the demographic information without having to measure it 52 weeks of the year, because that Nielsen would not be able to afford, nor would the advertisers or broadcasters be able to afford 52 weeks of continuous demographic measurement in all markets.
Which I find interesting, too, because you know radio does that. I mean, you can get instant overnight Arbitron ratings, mm-hmm. Why would television be any different than that?
Yeah, radio has figured out a way to do more weeks of acquisition of demographic data, and that may be part of the model that TV does, but more likely what's going to move TV away from it is the people meter.
Well, I'm aware of that, and also I would like to remind the radio industry that nonetheless the data is 90, 120, 150 days old, depending on when you're looking at it, Ray. So
right.
For radio and TV, hopefully, maybe you can talk a little bit about that, Chris, where the people meter is going and where other innovative rating technology or methodology is going with that.
Before he answers that, too, the fact of the matter is that even radio is rated on a 52-week year deal.
Information comes outdated.
Well, most of the time, it's still a fall, fall book and a spring book, basically.
Yeah. And the real issue on the radio side that would be a concern to me if I were an advertiser is that it's a diary. The information is acquired via diary keeping, but it's essentially an out-of-home medium. And just television gets a tremendous amount of criticism about the diary methodology, and it does have a lot of flaws to it.
But it's in-home.
Those flaws are perhaps even more of concern in radio, which is an out-of-home medium. But the real question that you asked had to do with the people meter, and
right.
That will be, I think, lead the way toward getting television away from this dependence on the sweep periods. We have one market that has local people meters up and operating. That's Boston. There are now an announced commitment to do 9 additional markets by Nielsen, and essentially those are the other 9 of the top 10 largest markets. Those will occur over the next 2.5 years. Beyond that, will there be people metering in smaller markets? That's really hard to say. It's a very expensive research methodology, and whether it'll be viable outside of the top 10, that's going to depend on how healthy the ad economy is, and it's going to depend on if Nielsen can figure out a way to do it cheaper.
Well, I think people meters will be a good thing for the industry, and in defense of not only radio but other ratings across all media. Say what you will about maybe methodology or effectiveness, or the bottom line is that they're all working off of the same yardstick, so no one has an advantage over anyone else in terms of gauging audience and being able to match up an advertiser's target with the best possible outlet or outlets.
And this people meter thing, it's worn by a person? Is that what it is? Or
no, that's another one that Arbitron was looking at, which is called the personal people meter.
We'll talk about that in just a minute, okay?
Yep.
On the Advertising Show, our special guest is Chris Roars, president of the Television Bureau of Advertising, with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe. Back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe.
Getting a chance to hear this in stereo as we are, it certainly is a beautiful piece of music from NYPD Blue. Celebrating our guest today, Chris Roars, president of the Television Bureau of Advertising. Chris, it's good to have you on the show today.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Just to wrap up your thought on people meters as it relates to the radio industry, Chris.
Yeah, the people meter that's in Boston and functioning is called the local people meter, and it's a device that's attached to the television set in the home and requires viewers to log in and identify that they're there. The other device sort of in competition with that is called the personal people meter, and that's much like a pager. It's worn on the belt or attached to the clothing of the individual, and picks up not only television but also radio. It's an audio meter. Does not look like that one's going to get much traction. Nielsen has committed to go with the set that's attached to the television set.
The latter being a joint effort, wasn't it, between Nielsen and Arbitron? Or?
Yeah, they were working together, and they still are, but I think it's pretty clear that it's not, that one's not going to get out of the starting gate for a number of reasons.
You know, not to be confused with the Purple People Eater, which is a real bad song from the 1950s.
Right.
Okay, good.
And a Minnesota football team.
That's true.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's true. Back, was that Tarkington Day? Or was that
back with Carl Eller and Jim Marshall and Alan Page?
I was going to say, and Chief Justice Alan Page.
We can throw this all off, taking your sports calls right now.
Yeah, at 1-800. Chris, let's talk a little bit about the economics of the ad industry, and in particular television. TV remained strong throughout 2002. Where are we now with 2003 and the TV industry as it relates to economics?
Yeah, very interesting time right now. I call it a market looking for momentum. It's you know, we've absorbed the war and moved on and focusing on different things, particularly the economy, I guess, right now. And this is an ad economy that is waiting for momentum to develop, waiting for sort of a signal to get moving. And our sense of it is that there, number one, there is a substantial amount of pent-up consumer demand. We did some research last month at the time of our conference through Frank Magid Associates, and it indicated very powerful pent-up consumer demand, which could express itself if the war ended favorably. And then right after that, we've now seen consumer confidence measures perking up quite a bit over the last few weeks. Each report from the University of Michigan and others, the conference board, has shown consumer confidence picking up. Stock market seems to have stabilized and is trying to move forward. So all of that, I think where the ad business is everybody is now kind of pausing, trying to figure out how fast, how far to move forward, and everybody's watching the network upfront marketplace, which will probably begin to move next week. And they're watching that to kind of take a lead signal as to how strong the ad economy will be in the second half of this year. But it's clearly a market waiting and looking for momentum, and I think the upfront will sort of deliver the leading indicator of how strong it'll be.
Well, and for those that may not be familiar, the upfronts each May, the nation's broadcast networks unveil their fall primetime programming schedules and basically tempt Madison Avenue to purchase as much ad time as possible up front as a great, shrewd selling part on behalf of the networks. And you can also be a brilliant buyer if you choose the right comedy, drama, or reality show or sitcom. On the other hand, you choose the wrong one, and you maybe wish you would have waited. So it's kind of an interesting way to buy television, and it's interesting on both the buy side and the sell side. You triggered a thought when you were describing the economics. I want to talk a little bit about the satellite delivery systems versus the cable television delivery systems in the short 1 minute we have left.
Yep.
How has satellite TV impacted cable?
Well, it's growing extremely rapidly. It's now up to 20% of the multi-channel subscriber base. In other words, 20% of the homes that get cable network programming are getting it via satellite.
That's CBS, significant.
Whether it's Echo Star or the Dish Network or DirecTV.
So in other words, if you receive cable television through the satellite, are you getting still the you're getting the network, but you're not getting the local?
That's right. You get the commercials that are national advertisers, but you don't get the local commercials if you're a satellite subscriber. That's the primary distinction. As far as being a viewer, there is no difference. The same programming comes into your home, whether it's coming in via a satellite dish or via a wired cable hookup.
We are out of time, Chris. As always, it goes very quickly when we have such a great guest like yourself. We'll be back on The Advertising Show. Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth to wrap up this hour.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
It's The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, back with you for our final segment this hour, and a special thanks to Chris Roars, president of the Television Bureau of Advertising. And that is the theme from...
David Letterman.
That's the right. Yeah. That's the right. David Letterman.
Say hello to Paul. Schaefer.
Paul needs to grow some hair or something, okay?
He's...
Looks like an alien. Chris Roars, a special guest. You can find out more about the Television Bureau of Advertising. Go to tvb.org. And as Chris pointed out, there's a lot of good information on the website that is free. And that's a good idea if you're thinking about doing television advertising. Sure would be a good idea to find out a little bit more about it before you venture into that arena.
Apparently an agency and advertiser section on the website at tvb.org is supposed to be a special place for everyone to go. I'm going to do that as soon as we get off the air
today.
It's
a special place.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Patricia Pitano is our guest next week on the 24th. Wireless Technology and Advertising, president of Pitano & Associates. She'll be in Los Angeles, and we'll be talking to her here on The Advertising Show.
And, you know, she should be a great guest. The last time we spoke to her over a year ago, she was at her home, her lake home, out at Arrowwood Lake outside of Los Angeles. We're going to ask her to send pictures so we can put them up here in the studio. Feel like we're lakeside.
Lakeside, yeah. You know, we can just go ahead and flood the field next door. That'll be fun, too.
You know, we try to, not try to, we want to, but we don't always successfully do this, and that is feature the a few of the highlights from The Tonight Show with Jay Leno in terms of his, what is it called?
Don't know.
Headlines.
Headlines. Thank you very much.
Yeah, which he does every Monday. And just from a few weeks ago.
Can you tell that I don't watch Jay?
Yeah. Well, we just played Letterman. I'm trying to do some equal time here.
I see. Okay.
Three that jumped out in this group that I have here. One in particular, it's from the health section of a newspaper, and this is a headline. Okay. And it reads, "Eating Less May Aid in Weight Loss." Eating less may aid
in weight loss. Golly.
And another one that I thought was interesting. Here's an ad. You can see it here. The headline is colon cancer.
Yeah.
You can prevent it. Mm-hmm. And then when you go and you read a little bit further, it has what's called a it's a screened back little inset of a burst, and then they put the copy in the center of the burst there. Free eye scraper with every colonoscopy. Ouch. I don't know what you think, but that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
No.
And then we have a hell of a deal here on a furniture. This is a little classified ad. It says, moldy futon. Maybe you can use it. $20. And then it goes on to give the phone number.
At least they're being honest.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Honesty in advertising.
You're talking about newspaper advertising. According to the area called the Data Center, in Advertising Age magazine, the most recent circulation results for newspapers show the continuous of a long-running trend, and that would be that of circulation gradually declining. Okay?
Hmm.
Now, there was one newspaper that was still up, actually up 2% with USA Today. But right behind that, the Wall Street Journal, that was not available for that. But the New York Times, listen to this, down 5.3%.
Wow. That's significant.
I think it is, too. Los Angeles Times, down 0.6%. Washington Post, 1.9 loss. Chicago Tribune, down 1.1. The New York Post, however, is way up there at a 10.2 increase. So,
you know, I wonder if the New York Times, nytimes.com online edition has eroded their traditional circulation. That would be interesting to know, because the nytimes.com, along with wsj.com, I visit frequently. And
well, I get the Times daily. You know, the .com version.
The email alerts, et cetera?
Well, yeah, they send you a whole newspaper, basically.
Really?
Yeah, it's a good deal.
You know,
we just eroded their circulation a little bit more.
Well, when we had Ellis Booker on several weeks ago, who's the editor of B2B Magazine, we discussed the fact that maybe some editors out there certainly are hesitant about putting their entire publication online, and I think our advice to that is put content online that is only available online, and then maybe you can justify some kind of prescription or subscription, I should say, charge to your traffic. If it's just a duplication of your traditional publication, then maybe it should be free, but then is it going to erode your ongoing traditional circulation?
Right.
Something's going on there.
So if you're thinking about traditional advertising in a newspaper, it might be wise to do some research and put some facts and figures together. And that all-important CPM would be a good concept, too.
You know, we're going to have John Beto, who is the group publisher for the Texas Network of Business Journals, on the show here in the next few weeks. And he's going to talk about just what you were talking about with the New York Times. They have a full edition of the Business Journal across many markets in the U.S., and he's going to talk a little bit about that and how they came about doing that and the success of it. So we're going to look forward to a visit with John here. So
very good. Look forward to that. Hope you can plan on joining us this coming Saturday, May 24th, for Patricia Patano, Wireless Technology and Advertising. We're going to talk a little bit about that.
Should be interesting. You know, it's something that's not talked a lot about, something very popular in Europe and Asia, and not really being talked about here because it's fairly new, so it's an interesting subject.
If you're a new listener to The Advertising Show, hope you're becoming a fan, and if you are, please tell your friends, neighbors, and relatives, too. Or maybe just a mailman or something if you see him walking down the street here. The Advertising Show. We stream it live online at theadvertisingshow.com. And, of course, it's on the SSI Radio Network as well. So, until next week, Don't make any stupid advertising mistakes, or at least call us or
email
us. You may
end up on this show.
Exactly. The Advertising Show, brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine, a Big Radio Midgets production on the SSI Radio Network.